On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. More change is afoot for Democratic leadership in the legislature. We have State Senator Janet Bewley of Mason, who announced in recent days she will not seek re-election in November. Here is a bit of roadmap for our discussion with the outgoing minority leader. Redistricting, as the Wisconsin Supreme Court has said, it will take a least changes approach to the current political map boundaries. Labor market shortage, a slate of bills aimed at rebuilding the workforce with changes to safety net programs. And we start with the changing face of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin. What should be the top priority of Wisconsin Democrats going into an election year? 800-642-1234. State Senator Janet Bewley represents a large swath of northwest Wisconsin, including Superior, Ashland, and Rice Lake. State Senator Bewley, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate being on.
Well, given your upcoming retirement, what are your key priorities over the next 10 months?
Well, first of all, we have about three more floor sessions ahead of us. We're going to be going to the floor next week, and we're going to be taking up quite a few things that I anticipate many are going to be relieved to hear that the governor will veto. And those have a lot to do with election reform, as the Republicans like to call it. It's very important that we voice what I believe is the public's concern that the Republicans are looking for a problem to continue with their plans to limit people's access to voting. So we're going to be taking those up, and that's going to be a very, very significant part of our time in the next floor session.
So voting very much on your mind. The state Supreme Court ruled Friday that it won't take up the challenge to absentee drop boxes. That was a lawsuit from Republican gubernatorial candidate Rebecca Clayfish. What is your response to that?
Well, I think it's part and parcel with what happens every time the Republicans ask for a legal opinion about their objections to our election process, which is they're unfounded. In every legal attempt that they have made to either prove election fraud in the last election or to find more and more ways to limit the access to vote, the courts are saying, no, you can't do that. There is no fraud. This investigation is unnecessary, unfounded. And I think more and more people are realizing that the Republicans are fumbling on this issue and are desperately trying to keep it alive.
Along the lines of voting, legislative Democrats said at the end of 2020 that they needed all hands on deck in order to fight for fair maps and fair representation for Wisconsin voters. And now that the maps are in the hands of the state's high court, what is your party strategy now?
Well, right now we're waiting. We're playing a waiting. We have to wait because all of the maps that can be considered by the court, including one that was drawn by the group that I am in, the Senate Democrats, they are all have been accepted because they do follow the least change that the court demanded, unfortunately. And we're just waiting for them to select one. We believe that's the strategy that they're going to take. We don't think the court is going to draw a new map, but all oral arguments are done, and it's just a matter of the court telling us which map they like the best.
Talking with Janet Bewley, Democratic State Senator and Senate Minority Leader, represents a large chunk of northwest Wisconsin. You can join in. What questions do you have for the State Senate's Minority Leader? What should be the top priority of state Democrats going into this election year? 800-642-1234. Let's talk a little bit more about the party. You're not the Democrats' only leader to step aside. Gordon Hintz, the Assembly's minority leader, left his post last month, mulling over as to whether to run for re-election. Younger members are now becoming leaders. We have Kaylin Haywood of Milwaukee and Representative Greta Neubauer of Racine. What effect might you see of those types of changes, a newer generation, on the party's future?
Well, first of all, I think it's absolutely necessary. We have a lot of people that are well beyond retirement age. I'm sure that all, if not most, if not all, are very loyal people that want to do what they believe is the right thing. But sometimes the right thing is to get out of the way in order to make a path to public office for younger people. The state legislative seats are usually the best next step for many young office seekers. And with so many young, strong, very, very bright people waiting in the wings, I believe that when it is time for someone of my age to move along, it's the right thing to do. I'm very, very proud of the time that I served. Without a doubt, it's the most rewarding work I've ever done in my life. But when the time comes to choose to retire, and I am beyond retirement age, I think it's the right thing to do. People will not, I'm not going to disappear, but I'm very excited about the fresh young minds that are coming into politics.
But what about your district? You were reelected to the state Senate in 2018 with 51.1% of the vote. Are you concerned that your district could flip in November?
The district that I represent has always been purple. Purple's a good thing. Purple means that we have a good balance of all kinds of opinions because the district itself is very diverse. I think that democracy is based upon the presence of a minority or many minorities. Our democracy is also based on the minorities having a voice. And I think that if it was just one party in either direction, in any direction, that is not what democracy is about. And it requires that those who are in the minority to be very articulate, to reach out to their constituents in a very attuned sense to why people feel differently. It made me a better legislator. It makes me a better legislator because I have to understand all sides of arguments, but I'm still a Democrat. Democrats still get consistently elected in the North. We have people that are anxious to run as a Democrat, and I think that we will keep the seat. I believe we will win it. There's good things ahead for Democrats and for the people of the state of Wisconsin.
And when you say anxious, you mean eager, not exactly anxious as in scared to run.
Oh, exactly. Thank you. That's
sure,
true.
Sure.
They're eager. They're very eager to run. That's right. There's a little anxiety in a campaign, without a doubt. But no, there are good people that are now serving in office all across the northern part of the state. And I'm pleased that they are interested in running.
Well, I think I'm hearing this sentiment from you because you once said compromise can be a dirty word in politics, mm-hmm. but not to you. Do you think that still holds true when you see the divisiveness, you see the tribal politics, the deep divisions, and what happened after the 2020 election?
I believe it more than ever because compromise means, number one, you're listening. If you close your mind to other points of view, you close your mind to potential solutions. And compromise is a dirty word in our state, not by everyone, but by too many, because they believe that you're going to compromise your values. You don't. You don't have to, and I wouldn't expect anyone to compromise their values, but they might have to compromise on how quickly their ideas get adopted, how fully sometimes you only get 50 or 70 or 80% of what you ask for, but at least you're moving, you're getting in the right direction. Rome wasn't built in a day, and we cannot turn away from getting the momentum that we need to get the change we deserve.
We're in conversation with the state Senator Janet Buley, Democrats' outgoing minority leader. How should the legislature address workforce shortages? What about housing issues? What do you want lawmakers to understand about what you're experiencing at this point in the pandemic? Where are the greatest gaps in support? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Senator Buley here on the Ideas Network. You are with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Outgoing Senate Minority Leader Janet Buley here talking about policy issues she wants to work on in her remaining months in office. Announced in recent days she will not run for re-election. Is your business or community feeling the effects of a worker shortage? What would help? How do you feel about proposed changes to unemployment and other safety net assistance programs? Would the workforce in Wisconsin be better in a different way? How do you feel about the Healthcare Heroes Act? 800-642-1234. Democratic State Senator Janet Buley with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's bring on a caller now. Becky is joining us from Hustisford. Hi, Becky.
Hello there, and thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to say a big thank you to Senator Buley for all the work that she's done, not just for those who are members of the Democratic Party and not just for those in northern Wisconsin, though I'm very partial since I'm originally from Bayfield County and went to school in Mason, but the work that she's done, and as she says, is going to be continuing in trying to push back against the misinformation about the elections, the unnecessary attacks that have been leveled against people of both parties who've just been trying to administer on a local level their elections in a fair way, who've been accused of engaging in illegal acts when all they're doing is trying to help their local elections proceed in a safe and fair manner as they have done for decades. And thank her again, thank you, for pushing against the Republican legislation that would really decimate our actual fair voting in Wisconsin.
Becky, thank you for calling in. Senator Buley.
Well, Becky, thank you for that. You probably know that that wonderful little school in Mason where you attended is still being used. 4-H and all kinds of dinners and meetings take place there, but also that's where people vote. And the wonderful people who man the booths, who make sure that all of the processes go on smoothly and accurately, are to be thanked for their service, not condemned, not questioned, not accused of committing fraud. It's a wonderful community. Those communities are all over the northern part of our state. Many wonderful places. I often think I want to take photographs of where people vote and where people post their mail. We have some of the most wonderful little places where people vote and tiny little post offices that are so important to the community. And they're all taken care of by very good-hearted people who are not out to cheat anybody.
I want to look closer here at the workforce issues facing Wisconsin. We saw Republicans introduce a package of bills aimed at addressing workforce shortages. Among things in this package, making changes to unemployment benefits and food stamp eligibility. And you have said these bills don't get to the root of the problems. How should Wisconsin address workforce shortages?
Well, first of all, we need to understand it. The default setting for the Republicans is that somehow there's a mass of people who are cheating us and staying home and collecting unemployment because they're lazy. That cannot be further from the truth. Now, if the unemployment rate is that low, and it is, it's very, very low, it's under 3%, that means that's how many people are collecting unemployment. So there isn't a huge amount of people that we have to beat up. Some of these bills are harsh and they're punishing people on unemployment when the fact is these people need the help. They're not cheaters and there's not that many of them that if they all went back, if they were all able to work, we would not solve our problem of the of worker shortage. Also, people are allowed to choose not to work if they don't want to. This is a democracy. People that choose not to work and do not collect unemployment are perfectly entitled to choose that. This is a free market economy. We have to provide a work situation that they choose. This is a free market. We have to compete for the people who are ready to or are looking for a different job.
But what about... what about people who don't show up for job interviews or recipients who are receiving the unemployment benefits who refuse a job offer?
Well, that's already on the books. You can't, you know, that's if you are cheating, that's called fraud. And we don't want fraud. And there are laws already on the books that address that. So what the Republicans are saying, well, we have to make it harsher. We have to whip them harder and make them go back to work. And that's not identifying how you solve the problem by going to the one thing that you think is the source of the problem and beating them more. And then they're going to go to work. That's just a very bizarre solution in my mind.
One thing I know that you really want to get at is access to affordable childcare and strengthening children's education to remove those barriers to employment or unemployment. How would you do that?
Well, you know, that is a very important point, and it's one of the things that I think is overlooked, that there are people who would work if they could, but there's a barrier in the way. Childcare is one of those barriers. Transportation is one of those barriers. And also just the fact that there are some places where they have highly technical jobs that aren't filled and the people don't have access to the education or training that they need. And we can help with that. 3-year-old kindergarten, to me, is a wonderful, wonderful solution. But then we're going to go to another place. The schools are underfunded. In some cases, the 3-year-old kindergarten programs do not receive some of them don't receive the kind of state support that they need. And we have a shortage of teachers. So it's a multiple solution approach. We have to make sure that teachers first are respected and paid so that they are going to want to work. Again, you can't beat them up to make them go back to work or choose to be a teacher if we're going to continue to flog them. Again, this is a free market economy. People buy what they want to buy and they work for the most part where they are made to feel like they're valuable. And I believe that we have to look very much at what would make people want to work where the jobs are needed. And again, that's what we do about products. And we hear over and over again, competition is good. Well, is competition good when you are trying to find someone to work for you? Is it your responsibility to make that job more attractive? I believe that's part of the solution.
Janet Buley with us, Democratic State Senator and State Senate Minority Leader. Inflation pain is real. We've seen soaring prices pose a real challenge. How should the state address the rising costs of goods?
Well, you know, in many cases, the price of goods, including things like gasoline, take a national approach. Inflation is one of those symptoms of our economy that can be tweaked by the federal government. When it comes to the actual inflation rate and gross national product, the kind of indicators that we look at nationally, those usually have the kinds of solutions that are addressed on a national level. That's not to say that the state doesn't have a role. We can make sure that we keep the middle class and those of lower incomes in a place where we don't suddenly have fluctuations where we have shortages. Now, for example, with the pandemic, when people got the stimulus money, when they got the APRA money, they went out and they bought goods. They didn't go and buy expensive durable goods. They went out and they bought the things that they need to keep in their homes. They bought butter, they bought bread, they bought canned goods, they bought toilet paper, they bought all the things that they can put in their cabinets, which is a natural way to go. They didn't go wasting it. And it saved many, many families. The Biden administration and our governor made such wonderful decisions about how to help our state stay out of a recession. But it did cause a supply shortage for many things. We also know that our infrastructure at our harbors, and our transportation system, particularly rail, is outdated. And again, Democrats want to infuse the states, and the governor wants to distribute program money to improve the railroads and our harbors and our roads, and that is being done.
State Senator Buley, thank you for joining us.
Been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Janet Buley, Senate Minority Leader, represents a large portion of Northwest Wisconsin, first elected to the legislature in 2010, recently announced she will not run again. Stay with us. More State Cap to come after a news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's a department in the state that oversees licensing and regulation of businesses. It has a critical role in building codes and ensuring the safe and sanitary conditions in public and private buildings. Don Krim, Secretary for the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services, DSPS, is here. Are you licensed through DSPS? How efficient is it to renew your license? Are you a contractor or in the trades? What do you want to say about building codes? 800-642-1234. Secretary Krim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Well, your department processes about 13,000 licenses and renewals each month, and many applications start with pen and paper sent through the mail. Then they are entered into data into the computers. How is this system affecting the speed of license approvals?
Well, as you can imagine, we are in a technology era. And so as you think about the process that you've just described, it is primarily manual. So we have really rely on our labor intensive workforce to do all steps of the process. I'm excited to share that we've embarked on a technology project, that we're doing some technological upgrades, but with all technology, it takes a minute to really get it up and running and going. And unfortunately, the same people that are doing that manual process are the subject matter experts in the technology project. So right now they're doing double duty.
So the department says the amount of applications has increased 28% since 2017. What is causing the increase in the number of applications, license applications?
Well, you know, we are in the pandemic, like everyone. And the governor was able to put out some emergency legislation to license people who have had not been in the workforce for the past 5 years in healthcare or from out of state. And so that process has increased our licensing. But for the most part, people are being educated, getting their credentials, and moving into the more than 244 occupations that we license. So people are trying to work in areas that require licensure. And so we're excited to help them get into the workforce.
We're talking with Don Krim this segment, and we're going to try to get a better connection here. Don is Secretary for the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. The department works with licensing professionals and enforcing commercial building codes, among other things. You can join in. Are you a professional who applied for a license through DSPS? What was your experience? Developers, what are your thoughts on the new mass timber guidelines for commercial building codes? What questions do you have on building codes and sustainability and the impact on climate change? Professional, licensed professionals, what questions do you have for the head of the Department of Safety and Professional Services? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at wpr.org. Secretary Krim, I think we have a better connection. Can you hear us better now?
I can, yeah.
Great, great. Well, I want to move on here to just ask you just a bit about when the rollout will happen, when you are able to bring the technology online to do more online license applications.
So we are excited about this online process. I hope you can hear it in my voice. As I mentioned previously, the people that are doing the manual process are the subject matter experts, so they are informing the technology project. We believe we are going to be able to have our system in place in May, just in time for graduation. As you can imagine, there's going to be some training that will go with that. But our hope and our desire and our desired time frame is May.
And would this be for all types of applications or just specific segments of applications?
So the overall overhaul is about all of the licensing applications, 244. But as you can imagine, you can't put the switch on everything at once. And given the demands of the pandemic and what we're seeing in our healthcare and mental health, we are prioritizing our healthcare licenses first. Earlier this year, I had convened a healthcare task force to talk about some of the challenges that workforce was facing. And as you can imagine, as we've talked about fatigue and stress and things of that nature, also we talked about problem solving, about how to get licensing done more quickly. And as a result, we've been able to stand up this technology project.
Let's bring on a caller now. Bruce is joining us from Madison to discuss the licensing process. Hi, Bruce. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, I'm working with the Wisconsin Psychological Association, and we've been receiving a lot of comments and complaints about how long the process has taken. I'm also a former chair of the Psychology Examining Board. And in the time that I was on the board, we got a lot of good board services and that there was a fairly quick kind of response to licensing requests. And that does not seem to be the case. And I don't know how I heard about the new program that you're instituting, and I'm hoping that that really gets established soon, because people are complaining that it is taking over a year to even get what should be quick turnaround applications, that the information being asked for is sometimes repetitive and it gets lost. Some people have sent things in multiple times and there's no record of it showing up. People have been told their payments haven't been received when they have the canceled checks. And just a whole myriad of things. Another complaint that I've noticed, because I attend board meetings, is that the boards don't seem to be getting the kind of services that they used to. And I guess I'd be interested in hearing any comments from the secretary about this.
Bruce, thank you. Secretary Krim.
Bruce, thank you so much for sharing some of the information that you've heard from people. And thank you once again for serving as the board chair. As you can imagine, we are excited to get people working. Our goal, first and foremost, is to bring people in the workforce, especially as you talk about psychological services. We know how important our social workers are. As you can imagine, our staffing is a little different than perhaps when you were there. Our numbers are down in terms of the number of positions that we have allocated. When I arrived, those numbers were less than what they had been in years past. However, we are doing the best we can with those limited resources, and the impact of the pandemic has impacted our agency much like it has impacted workforces around the country. But I can assure you, our essential employees were there handling the manual paper processes during the pandemic all that time, and I too was in supporting them. And so we continue to look at our technology, our operating efficiency, and what we can do to secure additional staff so that we can turn around these applications much more quickly. So Bruce, again, thank you for your assistance and time on the board, and please share with the people that you're hearing from that DSPS is on the case.
Secretary Krim, does DSPS have enough staff, have enough workers to be able to process these licenses in a timely fashion?
The short answer is no, we do not. Unfortunately, when I started January 2019, I saw all of the difficulty that we were facing with our licensing project processing due to being short-staffed. Immediately, I put in a request in my budget to ask for staffing, in which I got less than a third of what I requested. We had an opportunity to request staffing 2 years later in the biennium, again, less than a third of what I requested. And in that request, I got three positions, but only one was permanent. The complexity that it takes to process licenses and train and get people proficient, you're not really able to do that with a limited term employment workforce. And so relying on LTEs is not the way to go. I am hoping for more permanent staffing, and I will continue to make those requests. But staffing is what I need.
Would you characterize what you're facing, a backlog of applications?
Well, what we're doing is, because there's 244, there's a wide range of processing that occurs. Some can happen very quickly, some more complex, especially in our health areas, that requires information from the applicant, third parties, as well as exams. So it's difficult to quantify a time frame. What we say to people is, as soon as you are ready for licensure, please submit your complete application with your payment, and that enables us to get started. And then, as you see the additional pieces of information and documentation that's needed, please send those in right away and talk with those in the third party to get those in quickly. And so it really varies dependent upon the process that it takes for the particular application.
Your colleague agency, DWD, Department of Workforce Development, engaged, I believe it was Google Analytics, to figure out how to streamline the process and be able to get applications through in the unemployment area. Do you see any crossover there to be able to use analytics in your department?
Thank you for asking that. We had a chance to talk with DWD right away when we heard about the project, and we too have been engaged in some Google Analytics. With all technology, remember, when you bring it in the door, your implementation is all about how the systems talk to one another. And so we are in the process of evaluating that tool, putting it in place, and making sure that we have the proper connections from our manual process and the Google Analytical process. But yes, our friends at DWD have been very helpful telling us more about that tool.
Secretary of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, DSPS, Don Krim, with us. What do you wonder about building codes and sustainability? Developers, what are your thoughts on new mass timber guidelines for commercial building codes? Are you a physician who uses the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program database? Is it easy to use? Is it accessible? 800-642-1234. Back for more Stay Cap in just a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the Secretary of the Department of Safety and Professional Services. DSPS is the acronym. Don Krim is here. DSPS licenses the vast majority of our state's healthcare providers, including physicians and nurses, pharmacists, psychologists, as we've been talking about. The department issues tens of thousands of licenses each year. Are you a professional who applied for a license through DSPS? What was your experience? Don Krim also chairs the Governor's Council on Equity and Inclusion. What do you want to know about the state's efforts in DE&I goals? 800-642-1234. Secretary Krim with us for about 9 more minutes. I want to turn to building codes, because last month we talked with the City of Milwaukee's Director of Environmental Sustainability, Eric Schamberger, on their program, and Eric had concerns about state building codes and addressing climate change.
Cities don't have control over that. The state sets that code. And so that's an opportunity for the state to really look hard at that code and say, is it enough to meet the challenges of climate change? And my answer is, where it's going now, it's not.
Are building codes being overlooked, Secretary, as we try to find efforts to solve climate change?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, and thank you for sharing that clip from the gentleman in Milwaukee. I am excited to share with you that we are in the process of our commercial building code update. And in doing that work, we have sustainability and energy codes at the forefront. We are talking about how can we bring in more sustainable building features. One, and the gentleman in Milwaukee may be aware of it, is mass timber. The Ascent building, which is now going to be the tallest building in the world, is going up in Milwaukee, and that building is going up using mass timber. And so as we update our building codes, we're going to be putting in mass timber use guidelines. And we believe that's really going to help out, because mass timber is something that is a sustainable build that actually helps reduce greenhouse gases. And so we are looking at that, but we're also looking at adopting the IBC 2021 code, and that too has some spaces in new innovations around energy efficiency. So we are really excited about where we're heading with the commercial building code.
So mass timber is a manufactured wood that can be used for the structure of a building as well as aesthetically for a building. Why is the agency focused on this building material?
Well, I'm glad you asked. As you think about all the forests in the state of Wisconsin, there is quite a bit of supply of mass timber. And so we believe, because it's more economically, environmentally friendly, and because we have an industry right here and research done at the U.S. Forest Products Lab located in Madison, and research done with several professors at UW-Milwaukee on sustainable builds, we believe that's a material that serves Wisconsin well and can contribute to our economy.
I want to look just a little bit closer on making this connection to building codes and the climate. Wisconsin being one of several states that bar local governments from making rules requiring owners of existing buildings to report on or improve their property's energy performance. Do you think that should change?
You know, I do think there is opportunity and space for adjustment as we learn about new energy efficiencies. We really need to make space for it. I think it's easier to do on the front end when you're building, but I think if there are additional incentives for renovations and upgrades that meet better energy standards, that would bode well for us too.
Let's go to Carrie Ann now in Wausau. Hi, Carrie Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my question this morning. My question is particularly for the DSPS. My question is, how does the DSPS work with the state medical board pertaining to, let's say, physicians that are up for a license renewal that have previous and current infractions against them, and the state medical boards put their license through when there's current issues that would really prohibit that from happening? I'm trying to better understand how the DSPS works with the state medical board in that regard when there are quite frankly, you know, dangerous physicians out there currently practicing that should not be.
Carrie Ann, thank you. Secretary Krim.
Carrie Ann, thank you so much for that question. I, too, share your concern ensuring that those who are licensed by DSPS are licensed appropriately and are doing their work safely, especially to protect the public. When you think about the medical examining board, they work hand in hand with our agency. They review physician cases, they set standards, and when complaints come in, our agency with our team of lawyers review those complaints and we look at what the issues are, and we work closely with the state board to examine the complaint and what the infraction is to determine what the course of action is. So we do work hand in hand, but both of us share the making sure that we want to keep all patients safe, and those physicians that are not operating appropriately, there are repercussions to that inappropriate operation.
I would imagine time, too, is really important here, because if, a physician can continue practicing while while those interactions and meetings and the deliberation is happening, that, too, can be a risk.
Well, there is due process, and we do work closely with the medical board on these issues, but ultimately the decision is the medical board.
Okay. Carrie Ann, thank you for the call. I want to make space for the Equity Council Secretary. You chair the Governor's Council on Equity and Inclusion. Can you give us an update here on what progress the group is making?
Certainly. I'm really pleased to chair the Governor's Equity Council. There are 30 members from around the state of Wisconsin who are doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work. They are the experts in their community. So the governor really wanted to inform state policy and really receive some strategic guidance from these professionals in helping us develop a sustainable framework to promote and advance diversity, equity, and inclusion across Wisconsin state's government. He wants a Wisconsin that works for all. And to do that, you really need to hear voices that are doing this work and then see how you can impact policy. So we have been in existence for 1 year now. We have had 4 quarterly meetings throughout the year where with these 30 individuals, because they are not of state, most are not of state government, we had to do a bit of capacity building, explain state government, how it works, and then where they might be able to impact policy. And so there are 3 subcommittees that are doing this work, and those 3 subcommittees are the Community Engagement Subcommittee, as well as the data and policy, where they're looking at the policies that are in place. And then lastly, that 3rd subcommittee is looking at economic and business development. And they are in the process of putting together work plans to look at the type of work that each subcommittee will be doing to impact those 3 areas. And this Friday is our annual meeting, our first one of the completing the year, in which those 3 subcommittees will present their work plans to the governor, lieutenant governor, and the secretary of the Department of Administration, and then the work will begin. But this year has been about capacity building and putting in an infrastructure to determine what actions these subcommittees will take.
Secretary Krim, thank you for joining us.
You are very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Don Krim, Secretary for the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.